missing this.
When that didn't materialise, I think both Paulie and myself probably looked at each other and kind of thought, what next?
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Irish Paralympic swimmer and Sky Sports scholar Ellen Keane, and I'm so excited to be in the studio today to bring you a special Tokyo-themed show. In an ideal COVID-free world, we are beyond day 9 of the Olympic Games. We'd be glued to our TV screens in hope that our Irish athletes could recreate the magic of legends past. Would we have a new Olympic champion in the boxing ring? Would there be two lads in a boat making the nation beam with pride while also, at the same time, giving us something to laugh about? Would there be near misses, close calls, agonising fourth place finishes? Who knows? We have a whole year left to find out. But while we wait, our athletes are still training. And they've been training this whole time. Despite facilities closing and our country going into lockdown, our athletes have found a way to keep their Olympic and Paralympic dreams alive. And today, I get a chance to speak to two of those athletes. The first is a discus thrower from Cork. Niamh McCarthy is a silver medalist from the 2016 Rio Paralympic Games in the F41 classification. In 2017, she won another silver medal at the World Championships in Doha. In 2018, she was crowned European champion in Berlin. And at the World Championships in November of 2019, not only did she win Ireland's first medal of the championship, a bronze, but she threw the qualifying distance for the Tokyo Paralympic Games and secured a slot for Team Ireland. Niamh, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to pick your brain.
Thanks for having me.
First of all, you compete in the F41 classification. Now, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah, so obviously in Paralympics, there's, you know, a variety of different classifications, but specifically for myself, it's F41, which is basically for athletes of short stature. So to get classified, it involves, you know, different measurements in terms of your arms, your overall height, and then a combined. So there's two short stature classes, F40 and F41, which I'm in.
Cool. So it's just to make sure that everyone's on the same kind of level playing field and no one has any advantages.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so we know that you are a determined athlete. You are a European, world, and Paralympic medalist. Your plan definitely wasn't to go to Tokyo just to take part. You're obviously planning on another podium. So at the beginning of the pandemic, before the games were postponed, what were your plans and when did the pandemic start to affect you?
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, it affected me pretty quick in terms of we had a warm weather training camp scheduled for early March. And we only found out about 2 days before that it wasn't going ahead and that everything was cancelled. So it affected me pretty quick. But yeah, I mean, obviously my plans, you know, totally changed. I wasn't, you know, preparing for competition anymore. All of a sudden I was, you know, in lockdown and, you know, trying to work out a new way of training.
And when the games were postponed, how did you feel? Were you relieved? Were you kind of glad that you had another year?
I was relieved. There's a lot of athletes that weren't overly happy about it because obviously they were kind of, you know, waiting for it to come along. But I had a really hard year last year and there was just a lot of things that weren't quite kind of where I wanted them to be. So, yeah, my biggest emotion was relief because it gave me the time to really work on things and get everything just moving a bit better so that I would actually be better prepared for Tokyo when it does come around.
When the country did go into lockdown, did you take any time off?
Not really. I mean, it took a couple of weeks to kind of work out how to get any training done. But me and my gym coach had already kind of seen it coming a bit. Mm-hmm. So we'd already made plans, certainly for my gym training on what I could do at home.
Yeah.
If the gym were to close up, which obviously it did. So that was pretty easy. But throwing was a different story because obviously the GAA club, so yeah, I built my own circle last year and I built it in the Carrigaline GAA club, and yeah, so access there, that pretty quickly became an issue because it was just getting closed up.
So where were you able to train then? Where were you throwing?
I was only able to do like a standing throw, which is pretty much just a drill. There's a field, well, / green in an estate next door to me. a couple of minutes walk. So that's the extent of what I could do, really. I couldn't do a normal throw at all because there was just nowhere to go. There was nowhere open. I didn't throw properly for 3/4 months.
And when you were training in this housing estate, where did a crowd gather? Did you have any spectators who were watching this Paralympic medalist training for Tokyo in their housing estate?
Yeah, it was a bit cringy, to be honest, because even just the fact that there was loads of people around, because, you know, everybody was off work and there was kids around. So I didn't try to go there for every single session, depending on what time it was, because it just got too busy. But when there were people, I was just trying to stay away more than anything, because I had enough to be worrying about without kind of getting hit by my disc.
Was it more about trying to get in the zone as well? Because obviously when you're competing in these stadiums, they're filled with thousands of people, so you can't get distracted by them anyway. So was it kind of like recreating your own little crowd and trying to stay focused on what you were doing?
It was a bit, but the danger level was high, like with the space I had. So like it was kind of hard to be overly focused. Like I did a lot of just drills with a tea towel. So I don't have a big garden. I didn't have any space to release my disc. So I'd literally just hold a tea towel and I just do like most of my kind of technique work in my back garden where I could focus better.
That's mad adaption. And like, did you have to warn people what was going on? And just because people just sometimes just aren't aware as to how dangerous or how heavy a discus is. I remember you showed me your discus once and I was like, I couldn't believe how heavy it was.
Yeah, like, well, I think some people thought I was like playing frisbee or something.
Just a really weird shaped frisbee.
Yeah, like not everybody knows what discus is, but you know, a couple of people stopped and we'd have the chats, like, but at one point I was doing Zoom sessions with the Paralympics Ireland throws coach, so like that was a bit awkward because I'm like in the middle of a Zoom in the middle of a session and there's people walking by like, oh, how are you getting on?
Oh, the Zooms, they were lifesavers for me. And what exactly was your training routine? Did you have one, or was it just on the day you figured out on the day what you were going to do?
Well, my gym was the kind of most structured thing because I just basically did 3 home sessions a week, and I could just do them, you know, pretty much anytime I wanted. The throws is weather dependent. So, yeah, like if it was raining outside, I could do a bit inside. But I mean, throwing circles are slippy, but tiles are way slippier. Gym happened regardless, but throws, that kind of just had to happen whenever the weather was good.
And back to your throwing circle, how were you able to build that? Did you get funding, or was it just you just kind of saved up and used whatever you had to try and build it?
Yeah, no, because I used to throw in CIT a lot in the athletics track there, but they had a lot of problems with their cage kind of getting broken in winds and stuff like that. So there was a few times over the last few years, but it was just out of action and you couldn't throw there. And obviously I needed something that I could guarantee I could get my session done. So I apparently years ago, I don't remember, but my mother was speaking to the Carrigaline GAA club to see if they had any land they could give me. And again, apparently a few years ago, they agreed to this. So I don't
And your mother made them keep their word.
I think it was May last year that it was like CIT was out of action again. And I was just like, right, I need to come up with something. So yeah, I was actually going to put it in my old school at one point, but I remembered the whole GA thing. So yeah, they have a bit of land at the end of one of their pitches that they don't really use other than for parking. And no, they were very kind and just let me build it. And I just had a local builder man fix it up for me. So I just paid for it myself, because to be honest, the freedom it gave me in terms of not even having to book it, you know, I can just go there whenever, whereas CIT you'd have to book each of the sessions. So yeah, it was very good, and it's 5 minutes from my house, I think, so class. That's pretty handy.
And are you back there now?
How many weeks now? Since the end of June only.
Okay. And yeah. How does it feel? Is that the only place you're back, or are you using a gym facility now?
Yeah, so I'm back there just for all my throws. My gym, so usually I do coach sessions in the Mardyke, but the Mardyke delayed their opening, well, because everything obviously changed at one point with gym reopenings, and basically they are not currently allowing one-to-one sessions in there.
Okay.
And I need a one-to-one, so all of my gym work right now is done in Leavale High Performance Centre, which is an absolute godsend for the people of Cork, because there's also a throwing circle in there if it's bad weather. I can always go there. But no, it's perfect because there's very low numbers of bookings. I mean, I was in there yesterday and it was just me and my coach, nobody else for the entire hour, which was good. So I'm back in the gym now, I think about 3 weeks, maybe something like that.
So do you think it's easier to focus now on Tokyo?
Much. Because what I was doing before, it was barely even maintenance work. I mean, I didn't lose a lot of strength, thankfully, because the gym we were doing, we were trying to just do very high intensity, which I wouldn't usually do in the gym because usually it's, you know, very heavy lifts and whatnot. But yeah, like for throws, I was on standstill. So, I mean, I'm playing a bit of catch up right now. I mean, my throws are, I'm still kind of trying to get back into the swing of things, but it's much easier to actually really focus on Tokyo when I can actually do what I need to do to kind of do it there.
It's easier to make a goal and a plan now, is it?
Yeah.
And speaking of goals, have your goals changed in comparison to what your goals were for Tokyo 2020 compared to Tokyo 2021?
They have, in terms of, I was so anxious about Tokyo 2020 that I was kind of really just worried about how well I'd actually do, because like technically, you know, I'm kind of quite happy where I was, but basically mentally I was letting myself down, and just in competition I was just getting very anxious, very stressed out. And I was just, at one point of this early this year, I was thinking, if I can just survive Tokyo, if I can just get there and kind of, you know, be okay. But now, like I said, I have a bit of time to try and work on that and just get back that mental strength that I kind of need to really be, you know, aiming high, I suppose. So, yeah, like, not that I was going to be going to Tokyo 2020 just, you know, half-assing it either, but I wasn't really in the best place. So yeah, 2021, I hope to do a bit better and just be a bit stronger and where I want to be.
Do you think that the pandemic was kind of a godsend in terms of, you're probably stressing out so much about Tokyo coming and how quickly it was coming, and you couldn't really catch up on all the things you felt like you could have been doing, and then you were forced to take a break? Kind of. So do you think it was like a godsend to kind of help you refocus, kind of gave you that extra bit of time that you needed?
It was. And even the fact that, like, pre-lockdown, you know, like I would have been, you know, going to work and then straight to training after, and, you know, repeat. And I was always very busy. Whereas as soon as we were in lockdown, I was working remotely, which was great, and training from home. So there was a lot of stress of just day-to-day life that was taken out. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was a really good mental break for me, just not to be constantly rushing around the place trying to, you know, meet people at a certain time or whatever. So that was wonderful.
And do you have a support system? Do you have anyone to talk to, like a sports psychologist, to try and help you get that mental strength that you said you have been missing?
Oh, yeah. He's on speed dial. No, Stephen McIver, he's the Paralympics Ireland sports psychologist. So, I mean, he's been with us for many, many years. And also pre-lockdown, I was actually seeing a cognitive behavioural therapist as well to try and give me an extra something just to really kind of work on myself. So, yeah, no, there's and my cats, they help me too.
It's amazing what pets can do. Niamh, just one last question. What does it mean to you to be a Paralympic athlete?
You could get real deep with that
one. You could go, well, you can go as deep as you want to go.
To be honest, I think the biggest thing for me is opportunity. And that's not just kind of personal opportunity, but it's just, I suppose, getting the chance to kind of, you know, compete for your country, of course, is the obvious thing. But also giving kind of something for, you know, disabled people or any type of person around Ireland and beyond, just to have something to look at that maybe they might find it inspirational or something. I feel like it's a bit of a kind of duty in some ways, because I've said it in a few kind of interviews before, Olympians are amazing and, you know, they're kind of superhuman. But I think what is special with Paralympians is, you know, we're imperfect, you know, and I think that's easier to relate to, you know, with normal people. So I think they can just get something better out of that. So for me, it's not really a kind of selfish thing. It's just, you know, I am just trying to do what I can for Ireland and for the sport and for anybody who can get something out of it, you know. I mean, I got into the sport in a very weird way, and, you know, I'm doing well and I'm enjoying it. So, you know, anything bonus that comes out of that for myself is great, but it's just, I think, for the people more than anything.
And you're a great ambassador for the sport. Just I want to know what success looks like for you in 2 or 3 years. How would you be? What would you be content with? What would be a success for you?
I think I would like to. I don't plan too far ahead. Okay, so I think all my life I try not to plan too far ahead because you never know what happens. So I mean, I would like to do well in Tokyo. I would like to ideally get a medal. I mean, retirement is something in the back of my head just because. I suppose I'm getting older and I'm trying to think about what am I going to do when I can't do very well at sport anymore. So I think even just if I have a bit of a plan of what I will do for the rest of my life and just in terms of sport, just, you know, do well as long as I can and enjoy it for as long as I can. And, you know, just make sure that I've made the most of it, really. So
I don't know. As long as you're happy.
Yeah, basically.
Well, Niamh, thank you so much for your time. It was lovely to talk to you. I wish you all the luck for the coming year, and I hope to be on that plane with you next August to Tokyo.
Definitely.
Thanks again. Bye.
The OTB Podcast Network.
My next guest is a man who is no stranger to wearing the Olympic kit. Arthur Lanigan O'Keefe has represented Ireland at 2 Olympic Games, competing in the modern pentathlon event. In London 2012, he finished 25th overall, and 4 years later, at the Rio 2016 Games, he made a huge improvement to achieve an impressive 8th place finish. The modern pentathlon consists of 5 sports, which occur over 2 days at the back end of the Olympic schedule. On day 1, the athletes compete in a fencing event where they can gain crucial ranking points for their second day of competition. In the morning of day 2, the athletes are in the pool competing in a 200 metre freestyle race. They follow this with a fencing bonus round. They then go to another stadium where horses are kept to compete in a riding show jumping event. They finish off their day of competition with a laser run. This consists of running 4 800 metre laps and then successfully shooting 5 targets at the end of each lap. The ranking points gained in the other events throughout their competition impacts the order at which each athlete begins the laser run. So the athlete with the highest ranking points goes first and then the other athletes follow. The point difference reflects how many seconds behind the leader they are, and then the athlete that crosses the finish line is the winner. Arthur, I'm absolutely exhausted saying all of that, so I can only imagine how you must feel doing it. To compete in an event with so much going on, there must be so much planning involved. So what were your plans for 2020 and how did the coronavirus affect them?
I'll just start off with that was a very, very good summary. I'm glad you did, because you did it better than I could have done it. It does require a huge amount of planning. I'm not going to lie, like in competition day alone, as you said, there's so many different elements, so many different events that you need to prepare for. And you need a plan A, plan B, plan C, you know, depending on how those events go. But in terms of planning for the 2020 season, we had, I suppose, like any other sport, for me, I was looking for Olympic qualification. So I was going to be going into a number of targeted competitions, which were World Cups, looking to bag a certain amount of ranking points. We got one World Cup into the season, and we were about a week before to travel to the next competition. Everything closed down, everything shut down, so competitions were cancelled. That was kind of where we are now. Still no competitions.
Before the games were postponed and everything started to cancel, did you panic? Were you kind of panicking at any stage that you hadn't qualified yet and that it might go ahead without you?
Yeah, well, that was my initial worry, to be honest, is we were kind of 1 week away from a World Cup in Bulgaria, and there was going to be 2 back-to-back World Cups within a week. So that was really important for Olympic qualification. And I was worried that I was either going to go there and get stuck there and not be able to travel home, or else I would be, because they cancelled really, really late. Like, I think it was maybe 5 days before the competition was to start. So we were kind of on that, like mindset of, will we go, won't we go? You know, it was pretty sketchy. And then when it was cancelled, my worries changed to, wait a second, are the Olympics even going to go ahead? You know what I mean? Are the Olympics going to be cancelled? Are the Olympics going to be postponed? But going into that competition, yeah, for sure, my mind was on qualification. Didn't even think about the Olympics being cancelled. So I was worried that I was either going to get stuck in Bulgaria, or I was not going to go. My competitors were going to go, and then I would have a hard time qualifying for the Olympics. So it's mad how like each each few weeks, my worries changed.
Are you still worried?
No.
So when the pandemic hit and the country went into lockdown and facilities closed, how did you manage to keep training? Were you panic buying any equipment? Because even like normal people who weren't athletes were panic buying gym equipment to create their own home gyms. And then there was athletes throughout Ireland who were like, no, I actually need this stuff.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I fall completely in that category. I made a very impulse buy on a treadmill. I've got like so much gym equipment now. Like I think I basically spent all my carding for that allocated time on gym equipment and stuff to make sure, you know, if we weren't allowed to leave the house for 3 months, I'd be okay. And that was just my way of dealing with it. And that kept me kind of easy. And now I've got pretty much a fully functioning gym in my
And did you happen to pick up cycling by any chance?
Yeah.
So where are you just now?
I'm very like kind of, I say Zoom meeting ready. I've got cycling shorts underneath here and t-shirt on top. So I took up cycling about maybe a year and a half ago, actually, because I had an Achilles injury. Mm-hmm. But I've gotten even more into it ever since lockdown. Yeah, and I've now actually got a bike, and I got a little bit lost just before this interview.
It's okay. You're a bit of an amateur. It's fine.
Yeah. So I just about got back in time, so I was very glad to see the gate. But, yeah.
So not only do you do 5 sports, but you've also picked up a 6th one just to keep yourself occupied.
Yeah, it's just, I suppose a lot of our sports is like high impact. So fencing and running are very, very hard on the joints. And as I am getting a little bit older now at this stage, I'm 28, you know, little injuries and niggles have been popping up. Yeah. So I find I can work my heart just for a lot longer periods of time if I jump on the bike. So it allows me to maybe take one run away and I can add a good few hours on the bike and then I feel like I'm even fitter from that. So
yeah,
it's definitely been a really good addition to my training for sure.
I took up cycling during lockdown and oh my God, it is awful. It's so hard. It's like you just get so sweaty on it and it's definitely one of the worst workouts ever.
Yeah, no, I think if you're cycling indoors and you don't have a fan, like the water works, the tap opens and you're just sweaty.
You mentioned earlier that you had an Achilles injury. So with the extra time that Tokyo 2021 has given you, does that come with a little bit of relief knowing that you can kind of strengthen up and that injury mightn't affect you now going into Tokyo?
Yeah, like I'm in two sort of minds about that. I think just before lockdown hit, I was probably in the best shape of my life. And I'm not just saying that, I actually really was. And then because of the massive, my body's used to constant load, and the lockdown kind of changed my ability to train in fencing and all sorts of different events. So I think the injury that came or the niggle that came might have been because of a massive change in load, massive change in schedule, which they tend to not really like. But then maybe it was coming. Maybe it was something that was brewing, and it was going to hit just before the competitions, and that might have been a problem. So, yeah. At this next while as an opportunity anyway, and I know that you know, should the Olympics go ahead, I'll be in good shape anyway.
Let's sure. Trust that it was that, and you had to force.
Yeah.
You were forced rest. But you didn't really rest. You had a busy lockdown. You like a challenge. You did the 10,000 calories in 24 hours challenge and you successfully completed it. But how did that come about? Like, why did you decide to do that?
To be honest, I think a lot of us like kind of went a bit nuts during lockdown. I suppose like 2 months before, I was in the best shape of my life and I was really looking forward to competing and everything. And then I got a little bit of a niggle, and I felt like I let a lot of my fitness go, and I could see no competitions or nothing to kind of motivate me or something to kind of stimulate me, I suppose, in the near distant future. So I just wanted to come up with some sort of challenge that like kind of I felt like really tested me and pushed me to what I could do at that given time. And I suppose I came across that and I thought it'd be a bit of fun, to be honest.
In a normal training day, how many calories would you burn anyway?
Yeah, so like, to be honest, my normal day is quite a lot of calories I do burn. So I'd say on a normal day, between 4 and 5 anyway. So it's not something that's massively over what, okay, yes, it is. But it wasn't like doing a pentathlon and then doing, you know, another one a couple of days later, which is often the case, is probably harder, yeah, I would find, on the body than doing that challenge. Yeah.
So you were confident that you were going to succeed anyway?
I was. And a group of German pentathletes went out and tried it, except for they did it outside, and they ended up running 68 kilometers. They open water swum about 10 kilometers.
Oh,
and they
cycled. Awful.
And they go about 2 minutes before, and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that inside.
And the great news is that you actually captured it all on camera. So if anyone wants to go and see you do 10,000 calories, burn 10,000 calories in 24 hours, they can go find you on YouTube. You mentioned that you were going a little bit crazy. You happened to propose to your girlfriend. Was that planned, or was that part of the craziness?
No, that, yeah, look, that's, I'm going to say that was one of the good things I did during lockdown. I was always planning on proposing, but it was my plans were after the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, with everything being cancelled, and all the sort of things being cancelled over the next couple of years or next year, I felt like this was one thing I didn't want to kind of cancel or stop, if that were. So yeah, I decided to do that a little bit early. And I think it made, like, lockdown, looking back on it, like, much more happier time. And I'm really glad I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So Tal, your fiance now, is also an Olympic athlete. And was it really lovely, kind of, I know it's lovely anyway, having each other during all your training sessions, but just going through lockdown together and still being able to push each other. I know I moved in with my boyfriend who is involved in sport. So having someone there who understood, although he's not a swimmer, it was easier to be able to train knowing that someone understood. So having your fiance there and you both have the same goal and everything is affecting you the same, was that just something that you realized how special that was?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it went two sides as well. It's like, it's always one person there to train with and to, you know, to kind of keep you on the straight and narrow, keep training. And that's kind of always been there with Tal. But I suppose on the other side was, it made me feel much more reassured in myself when I was having those down days, when I was feeling demotivated, when I was questioning everything. She was also going through this phase, and it made, you know, made me feel like, you know, these weren't unnormal thoughts. This is perfectly, you know, natural to feel this way. And it's okay not to be really, really motivated every single day. You know, like, often when you go on social media and stuff, you only see, you know, what people kind of want their sponsors to see, you know, the way they're kind of, oh, I'm going to be so much stronger in Tokyo 2020. I'm going to make every day count. When in reality, like, you, some days you wake up, especially if your whole world has been turned upside down, you don't feel like that. You're unmotivated. You're questioning whether the Olympics are going to go ahead. Is this going to be a waste of time? All these sort of questions do kind of hit you sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's okay not to be motivated. So I think we went through all the ups and downs together and supported ourselves through it, and now we're back training really, really hard for like the last couple of months and motivated. So that,
and you had a great little doggo to keep you company as well.
He's making a racket in there, like, I can hear him, he's banging against the door trying to get in. But yeah, my dog is amazing. Got him into a dachshund called Hansel, and every time you look at him, he makes a smile. He doesn't care if the Olympics are not going to go ahead.
He probably doesn't want them to go ahead because he'll be away for too long.
Yeah, no, he'll greet you the same no matter what you do, which is so nice.
How is he coping now that you're back training full time?
To be honest, so like, one of the things that lockdown did for me was we moved to Natalia's parents' house in Meath, and we were living in the country, and we realised we really liked, you know, being in the country. And we've actually, as of like 6 weeks, we've actually moved from Dublin in the city to Meath in the country, and Hansel's loving it. grass to run in, and he can just be left free and everything. So he's loving the fact that we decided to live a slightly simpler life. He's happy out.
That's great.
We're training, so he's there.
So out of the five sports that you do, which do you like the least?
I like them all, but the part that I find, so the sport that I struggle with the most in terms of motivating myself to train for it would be the horse riding, and not because I don't like horse riding, but because there's such an unknown variable in a competition. Yeah. Every other sport you prepare and you can control the outcome 100%. Whereas in the horse riding, you can get a horse that you don't know, and that could be very problematic, even if you perform really well on it. So that is the element of pentathlon I least like, because I feel like at times it can be unfair. But as I've gotten older in my career, I've learned to accept the fact that some days you're just going to get a really difficult horse, and you're just going to have to, once that event is done, you're going to have to leave that behind you and then salvage whatever you can in the competition. But that is the one part of pentathlon I like the least.
That's mad though, that like at such a high level, you literally go to the stadium and it's like a lucky dip. It's whatever horse comes out of the hat, that sort of thing. Would you ever consider investing in a horse whisperer to bring with you to kind of calm the horse, or any like rituals you might have?
It depends on the competition. Usually high level competition, you get a horse that is capable of doing the competition, doing the height, and especially at the Olympics, no matter what you get on that day, it could be more tricky than other horses, but it can do it. So that's to an element fair enough. We do have an incredible riding coach called John Lettingham who travels with us to competitions, and we do call him the horse whisperer. Well, actually, wizard, because I don't know what he does, but he manages to get us to go around and touch wood, do pretty well. So I am confident in that event, but it is certainly a tricky one and it's also very nerve-wracking, because you never in pentathlon you can't win your competition on horse riding, but you can certainly lose everything in a minute, basically.
So between London 2012 and Rio 2016, you saw such a huge improvement in where you finished. Between Rio and now, which do you think of the sports have you improved most?
I'd say I've improved a good bit in the running side of things. So our sport went through a real change after Rio, where they made each second in the pool that you get worth less versus running. So there's been a big shift in our sport to people doing much faster running times. So I've had to change my body, change the way I train and everything to kind of show a difference in that. Also, I'm hoping, I've got a new fencing coach as well. He coached the last Olympic champion in Rio, so I'm hoping my fencing is going to be a good bit better as well. But I think instead of my individual events, I think they were pretty strong going into Rio. I would say that the difference for me now is I'm a more senior athlete now. I'll have had a bit more experience, a bit more competition experience, and I'm hoping that the difference between me then and me now is not so much a massive physical change, but more a bit more mature, and I'd say a bit more mentally robust. Should something go wrong, I have the mental tools and kind of systems that would get me through and not make it a complete disaster like it was in Rio, to be honest.
Call an eighth place finish a complete disaster. In December, as you said, you had to focus more on your running because of the points you get for running. You went to Kenya for training. Is that a plan that you're going to have to do again now that Tokyo is another year away?
Yeah, so that was kind of, I was coming off a pretty disappointing season in 2019, and I just felt like I needed a change, something completely different, something that would stimulate me, something that I felt I could gain from and learn from. And it was really, really amazing. It was really good. I came back from Kenya and my body changed really fast. And I was just, it just worked so well. So for sure, I'm going to, if I can, now look, it's hard to plan these days when you don't know what's going to happen, what kind of restrictions put in place. But if everything goes okay, I would definitely be going back to Kenya. Yeah, absolutely.
When you say that your body changed so much, is it that you're lighter, you're skinnier, you're more muscly? What is the biggest change that you've noticed?
I would say, my body's probably not so much changed now after lockdown, but that very changed.
I've seen you. You haven't put on any weight, which is stuff.
No, it was just more just, I would say, I became more of a runner shape towards a swimmer shape. That's all. Just a little bit. Now, it's only minor differences. In the first World Cup, I would have ran a lot faster, but I swam a lot slower.
Yeah.
So I changed into more of the athlete, the running side of the athlete than the swimming side, which replicates what the way the sport is going. Yeah. So I made the change that I kind of wanted to make. Maybe I lost a little bit too much in the swimming, which I'll try to get some of that back. But yeah, like I say change with inverted commas. I didn't really change.
And you're used to winning the swimming event as well, aren't you?
It's very depressing.
When you compare your Tokyo 2020 goals to your Tokyo 2021 goals, are they the same? Are they different?
Yeah, I think they're the same. Ellen, you've been to multiple Olympic Games. You're no longer going to Olympic Games just to go. That's the same with me. I wouldn't be going. I would have retired a while ago if I didn't believe I could win an Olympic medal. So my goal for Tokyo is always aim for the top, aim for gold, and with a very big expectation of at least a medal. So that was the goal in 2020, and it'll be the goal in 2021 as well.
Just back to you and Tal, I know the women's event, the women's final, is the day before the men's final. So if Tal wins a medal the day before your event, do you think that's going to spur you on, or do you think that's going to put some extra pressure on you?
No, I think years ago that would have put more pressure on me, and that would have made me feel like, oh no, now I have to be there. But now I've experienced this before in World Cups, where she's won a medal one day, and it actually has given me strength and belief, because we do very similar training in what we've done, what training we've done, how we've prepared, and then I've gone and won a medal as well.
So you've gone and won a better medal.
So yeah, like look, if she wins a gold medal, or any sort of medal for that matter, which is very, very possible, I feel like it'll give me strength going into my event, and I'll be extremely pumped and happy for her as well. So yeah, I think it can only be a good thing if she wins a medal.
You'll be the para couple when you come back from Tokyo. Not that you aren't already. Arthur, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see how this year turns out for you. I wish you all the luck.
You too. Bye.
The OTB Podcast Network.